Okay, so what I want to start discussing, and we'll probably be on this topic has many, many different aspects and covers most of the parak at this point, is the issue of the karban ha'omer. So, the printer is not working, but anyways, I don't think I put the psukim on. Okay, so what is the omer? So, we've been talking about a lot about sfirat ha'omer, but there's also the Korban HaOmer. So, did you guys get a chance to look at the Mishnayot that I put there?
Yeah.
Well, good. So, the... So, the Mishnayot are a good summary of the Halachot that we need to look at. Now, I noted to Yosef that you have this bit of a bizarreness that sometimes this happens, that the order of the Mishnah as found in the Mishnah is different than the order of the Mishnah found in the Gemara. So the perek in Menachot that's devoted to the issues of the Omer in the Gemara is the perek we're learning now, which is the sixth perek. But if you look at the Mishnah, the body of text of the Mishnah, it is not the sixth perek, it's the tenth perek. So if you want to look at the Mishnayot from our Masechet, you have to look there. So so let's look at those Mishnah for a minute just to get a bit of a grounding in what we're going to be talking about. Because like I said, this is variations of this sugya are the rest of the perek. We'll see what we actually cover. So the Mishnah there tell you that what does the Omer do? So the Omer permits what? Chadash, good. But there's two things that have to be permitted. What are they? Yes, the eating of new grain and the cutting of new grain. Both of those are usher before the Omer.
Wait, but aren't you taking Chadash?
Any cutting besides... Now, there's a machloket in the Gemara whether cutting new grain becomes permitted when you cut the Omer or when you bring the Omer. Right, meaning which does it depend on? Okay, but one thing that it needs to do is permit the right. So if we read just Mishnah, hey, Mishnah says Mishikarava Omer Yotzin Motzin, but Shuk Yushalim Shumale Kemach Vekali Shalom Ratzon Chachamim Devarim Meir Bihuda Omer Ratzon Chachamim Mayos. And as soon as they brought the Omer, you'd go out and the marketplace would be full of flour and grain. Remeir says this was not what the Chachamim wanted. Rabbi Huda says it was. Okay. Mishikara va'omer huter...
I didn't understand. What was the point of telling us that the markets were full of...
Well, the Gemara will get into that why. But right now, let's just... Right. So the Gemara says, Mishikara va'omer huter chodesh miyad. Once you brought the omer, so you could eat the new grain. Varuchokim, the people who are far away, and therefore what? They didn't know when the omer was brought, so they can assume.
When you say far away, that's like...
far enough away that they didn't actually know directly. They didn't have direct access to know when the carbon was brought, so therefore they just have to assume, was the carbon brought or not? So by chatzot, they can assume that it was brought.
The day was officially the 15th or
16th?
16th. It was 16th.
Always the 16th. You bring the Omer on the 16th.
And you brought it to Kohen Gadol.
It's a carbon. It's a carbon sibur. It's brought in the Beit HaMikdash.
Yeah. Okay. So
not the Kohen Gadol.
So, but every single Kohen.
No. It's one carbon.
Oh, for?
For all Kol Yisrael.
Oh.
The Omer is a grain offering brought for all of Kol Yisrael once a year in the Mikdash.
One guy from his field has to bring an omer for...
No. Not one guy. The Beit Din appoints someone. Remember we did this, the cutting of the omer? The Beit Din appoints someone to cut, and then a Kohen brings it on behalf of Klal Yisrael, just like the Karban Tamid.
Yeah.
Right? All Karban Ot Zibor. It's one Karban brought on behalf of all of Klal Yisrael. Right? Every morning and every afternoon, there is a Karban brought on behalf of all of Klal Yisrael called the Tamid.
So that's...
The omer is just like that. It is a carbon tzibur. And a Kohen brings it.
Okay.
Whatever Kohen's there. I don't know.
Even if you're close to your Shalai, you could start cutting immediately on the 16th. If you were farther away, you would wait till Chatzos.
Because, if you were close, then once the omer was brought, then you could eat. But if you were far away...
You could eat and also continue
We'll get to whatever the heter of the omer is, yes. Meaning, if you're close to Yerushalayim, that moment of heter is when the omer is brought. If you're far away, you don't know what it is, by chatzot you're allowed to assume.
And this is then, if the person they appointed happened to be outside of Yerushalayim.
No, not the person appointed. You cannot eat new grain anywhere in the world.
Right. Oh, so it's the matter of being outside just regards to eating it.
Try this one more time. The moment at which anybody in the world is allowed to start eating new grain is when the Omer is brought. If you lived in Yerushalayim, then how did you know when you were allowed to eat the new grain?
Once the Korban was brought.
How did you know? Because you were in Yerushalayim. Right? Word travels fast. If you didn't live in Yerushalayim, and there weren't phones, and there weren't emails, and there weren't tweets, and there weren't WhatsApps, and there weren't Instagrams, and there weren't whatever.
Messenger.
What?
Need a messenger.
So, no, you don't need a messenger.
They wouldn't have someone
go. No.
We're not just.
You would wait until Chatzot. And by Chatzot, you could assume it was done. That's what I just read.
Yeah.
That's it. Because the only way to find out would be a messenger, there was no messenger. You just waited until 12 noon. And then you could assume that the carbon was brought and you could eat new grain.
Yeah,
why is that?
We were drinking up points earlier on, like, oh, how would you went back and forth? Oh,
and the answer is you waited till Chatzot and then you could assume, because this isn't like Rosh Chodesh, right? It was, you knew what day it was. Remember, you already knew. It was already the 16th of the month. By that point, the messengers took 2 weeks to get to you. You already knew what day of the month it was.
No,
it's a carbon tzibur, it's one carbon, that's it. So that was in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. But then the Mishnah says, Mishacharab Beit HaMikdash, Hidkin Rabbi Yochan Ben Zakkai Sheyom Hanev Kulo Asur. Once the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, Rabbi Yochan Ben Zakkai decreed that you couldn't eat new grain the entire 16th, you had to wait until the 17th. Now, what does Hitkin mean? Semcha, what does Hitkin mean? Decreed, what does that mean? What level of prohibition is it? Biblical or rabbinic?
Rabbinic.
Which means, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, he thinks that there's no Beit HaMikdash. When midoraita does the grain become permitted? On the 6th? No. No. Hitkin is he makes you wait 24 hours, which means that biblically it was permitted before that. So when is before that? So it was
16th.
At the 16th in the morning. Right? The 16th in the morning. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, again, you have to be clear on this, because these are the points the Gemara is going to be building on. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai thinks, when there's a Beit HaMikdash, when can you start eating the new grain? When you bring the Karban HaOmer. Right? When the Karban HaOmer is brought. When there's no Beit HaMikdash, when can you start eating new grain? The morning of the 16th. Midrabanan, when can you start eating?
Morning
of the 17th. Well, sorry. Yom HaNef Kulo Asur, the end of the 16th. Right?
Why?
Meaning at night.
What's the reasoning
for that? What's the reasoning? So, because, as the Gemara will tell you, he's worried that what's going to happen, that if he thinks that biblically, once the sun rises on the 16th, we'll see if it's sunrise or dawn, but okay, for whatever, morning of the 16th, you can eat before the Karban HaOmer. Okay? When there's a Beit HaMikdash, you have to wait for the Omer to be brought. So what's he worried about? Shema Yibana Beit HaMikdash. He's worried that what's going to happen, the Beit HaMikdash is going to be built next year, and people are going to remember that in past years, when did they eat grain? First thing ala boker, right? First thing in the morning. So what does he do? He says, no, you have to wait till the end of the day, this way, when there's a Beit HaMikdash, you won't be confused and end up eating before the Omer is brought. Right? Because according to him, when there's no Beit HaMikdash on a biblical level, you can eat first thing in the morning on the 16th. Once there's a Beit HaMikdash, you have to wait for the Omer to be brought. So let's say it's the year after, it's the first year the Beit HaMikdash is built, and you have lived your entire life without a Beit HaMikdash. So you're used to eating new grain starting on the 16th. But are you allowed to? You're going to wake up and you're going to have your... Yeah, whatever. How you managed to turn it into cereal so fast, right? But fine, you're going to have your toasted wheat right? Your toasted wheat for breakfast, a la boker, right? First thing in the morning. But you're not allowed to, because now you have to wait for the karban. Because now the Beit HaMikdash is built. So he's worried that you're going to get confused. So what he did is, even when the Beit HaMikdash is not filled, he says, wait till the end of the day. And this way, no one is used to eating new grain on the 16th. They're only used to eating it after the 16th. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it's biblically prohibited. Because it says on Etam HaYom HaZeh. Now I want to hold that thought because I want to look at the Pesukim and see what is he getting at. And why is it that a chatzot you're allowed to bring? You're allowed to eat, rather. Because you know that Beit Din is not lazy. And therefore, by chatzot, you know that the Omer has been brought. Okay? And now the next Mishnah says, Ha'omer hayamatir ba'medina. Once the Omer is brought, you're allowed to eat grain ba'medina. What's Medina? Which, right, in the context of the Gemara, what does Medina always mean? Not the Beit HaMikdash. Meaning, regular grain is mutar after the Omer. But when are you allowed to start using new grain in the Beit HaMikdash? Shavuot. Ushteh alechem ba'mikdash. What permits new grain to be used in the Mikdash is only the wheat offering that we bring on Shavuot. So remember, the Omer Shteh alechem is part of this two public grain offering unit. One is brought on the second day of Pesach, that's the Korban HaOmer, that's of barley, and that allows you to eat new grain. And then there's Shteh Alechem on Shavuot, which allows it in the Beit HaMikdash. Because remember, there are grain offerings in the Beit HaMikdash, so there's plenty of grain going on there, right? There's five different types of grain offerings, right? Right?
Sorry, what's the difference between Hayat for Shteh Alechem and barley?
No, wheat. The Omer is barley.
Yeah,
the Shteh Alechem is wheat. The Omer is brought on Pesach. The Shteh Alechem is brought on Shavuot. The Omer permits you to eat your cereal outside the Beit HaMikdash, but you can't use new grain in the Beit HaMikdash.
In the Beit HaMikdash until Shavuot.
Until the Shteh Alechem. Ein mevi'in menachot bikurim menachat behema kodem l'Omer. You can't bring menachot and bikurim, etc. before the Omer. But maybe pasul. And if you do, it is invalid. Because of Alechem, you're not supposed to bring new minchas of new grain between Pesach and Shavuot. Lo yavi, v'mevi kasher. So if you bring a mincha from new grain before the Omer, meaning before the second day of Pesach, is it permitted? No. Is it invalid? Yes, it's invalid. What if you bring it after Pesach but before Shavuot? Are you supposed to bring a mincha of new grain? No. But if you bring it, is it valid? Post facto, it's valid. Okay? What grains are subject to this prohibition? And that's, we'll just summarize this last Mishnah. What is it? What grains are included? Hachitim. What's chitim? Good. What's chitim?
Wheat.
Seorim. Barley. Good. By the way, this is one of those things that Americans have a really hard time, I know I had a hard time learning. If you go into a supermarket and you ask for barley, and you say sorim, they will have no idea what you're talking about, because for some reason we have a perfectly good word in Hebrew, in biblical Hebrew, for barley, which is sorim, but how do you say barley in modern Hebrew?
Barley?
No, grisim. Grisim. Don't ask me why. So if you go and you want barley, well, yeah, but there's a perfectly good, yeah, but it doesn't mean barley, right? It means like other grain. Sora is barley. But in modern Hebrew, grisim is barley. I don't ask me why. Hakusmin, vishibol chul vashifon, spelt, and rye. Now, shibol chul is classically translated as oats, though that is very likely a mistake. That is a big machloket in the Rishonim. There are two dead in the Rishonim, right? Rashi thinks that maybe we'll have a shear on this one day. I haven't prepared. We gave it, if you remember, I gave it last year. Pre-Pesach. Not morning Seder. We did like Pesach shear at night, I think. On a Tuesday. I don't know if you were, I think you were there, when we did oat matzah. So Rashi thinks that Shibolet Shul is oats. The Aruch, and other Rishonim who were in sort of the Middle East, think that it is two-row barley. It's another type of barley. It's two-row barley. There's good reason to believe this.
Rice
is in machloket Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri and the Chachamim. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri and the Chachamim. It's a machloket in the Mishnah. We paskin rice is not one of the grains. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri adds it for the purpose of chametz. Right? This is a fascinating machloket. Why is there a machloket? Why would you have a machloket about rice, whether or not it's one of the grains that can become chametz and subject to it? Good. So why would you say you can't?
Well, that's why.
Why is there a machloket? Tell me why there's a machloket. Do you know anything about rice and how it rises?
It has to grow in water. It's supposed to.
So I think, and this is, you know, what when I was learning challah with my chavrusa many years ago, this is what we came up with, is that rice, does rice rise?
Ooh, I don't know.
What do you think, Simcha? Does rice rise? Does it rise? Yosef, what do you think? Does rice rise?
Rice, if rice is rice?
Does it rise?
Oh, yeah. If it rises, rice flowering a little bit.
Good. So the answer is, it rises, but because it has a protein in it which mimics gluten, which is similar to gluten, but it's not as strong as gluten. And therefore, rice flour cannot be baked risen. It's very, very fragile. So when you shake it, it'll unrise, right? It'll pop. And if you try baking it, it won't bake risen because the heat will destroy it. It's not as strong as gluten. So you can see why there would be a machlokes. Because on the one hand, it rises, but it can't be baked risen. So it's sort of like the five grains, but it's... Now, one of the reasons is we'll... You know, again, if you guys want to do this as a whole shear, we can do this as a whole shear. I have it prepared. It's not a big deal. But do oats have gluten?
No.
No. Oats do not have gluten. They don't rise.
Okay.
They do not rise. They do not rise. And that's why if you get oat flour in the store and it rises, do you know why it rises? No, it has gluten added, genius. It says gluten added. If you have to get special non-gluten added if you're allergic to gluten. But regular oat flour, if you're using for like taste, will often have gluten added to it because it doesn't rise.
The only reason I do rice flour has something in it.
And it's something, correct, but it's not gluten. It's not gluten.
I knew it wouldn't be gluten, because when I was
correct, it's a protein which is simple, right? Gluten, what is gluten rise? Because it's a very strong protein that do you know anything about like the science of bread baking? Okay, why does gluten rise? Why does gluten allow bread to rise?
Yeast.
No, it's not the yeast, it's the gluten.
Gluten works like yeast.
It's gluten, because gluten is a strong protein which creates a crystal structure, and that's why it catches air. And that's what allows it to rise. The yeast just speeds up that process. But what allows it to hold is gluten. You can take yeast and throw it into rice bread. But then you heat it up, it'll collapse. Right? Because yeast helps it puff up. What holds it together and gives it that fluffiness is gluten. Right? Like, you can add gluten. Like when my wife bakes... If you get... You know, you go to the store, there's flour and then there's bread flour. What's the difference? Bread flour has extra gluten, which makes it extra puffy and extra chewy, right? So, like when Ora makes challah, she doesn't get that. You can buy gluten. You just add gluten, right? Which I understand that if someone is allergic to gluten, then that is poison. But no, thank God no one in our family is, so we add gluten. Fine. So the Mishnah says that these halachot apply to the five grains, whatever they are, chayavin b'challah, u'mitzarfin zemzeh, they're chayavin challah. That's one of the implications of... being one of the five grains. What's challah? What's challah? What is challah? Not what we call it. What is challah? Halachically. Thank you. No, it's not the portion you burn. It's the portion you give to the kohen, and nowadays, since we don't give it to a kohen, we burn it. Thank you. That's what challah is. That's where the name comes from. Now we burn it. Correct. Right?
Mrs. Alar spoke up and asked if you start again.
Yes. You can listen to the recording. Okay. Fine. V'asurin b'chadash milafnei ha-pesach. So these five grains are, one implication is archaiv and challah. So if you bake pure rice bread, do you have to separate challah? No. If you make wheat bread, do you have to? 100%. If you bake enough, obviously. You have to bake, which is a lot. It's a lot.
You're going to take challah from one of the five grains?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And only the five grains can become chametz. And these five grains are subject to the issur of chadash, both of cutting and of eating. Right? Because as I said, there are two Isurim. One is that you can't cut before the Omer, the other can't eat. Yeah? Yes. Yes, it is not kosher like not kosher meat. Correct. And that is the biggest machlokas in the world, and that's why. So that is one of the many, many machlokot, but we can't get there until we do the basics again. But you're right. Before the end of the year, I will try to go through the halachic issue, which is why is it that in Chutz La'aretz people are not machbid on yashan? Because as we'll see, this is very problematic. Because simple pshat in halacha is that we paskin that it applies in Chutz La'aretz, possibly midaraisa, right? That it applies even if it's owned by a non-Jew. Right, and applies even when there's no Beit HaMikdash and all that, which is why, if you know, talk to Yosef, he will tell you that nobody in his family has anything except Vada Yashan, right? Nobody in the Salvation family has anything but Vada Yashan. But the minhag for many hundreds of years is that people were not makbid in Chutz La'aretz on Chadash Yashan issues, and the question of why, though, again, in England that's less true. In England, they're more makbid than they are in America. Well. No, I'm telling you, I'm saying that as a statement. I don't know if they're like exclusively, but they're much more machbid than they are in America. The kosher organizations there, again, that's why a lot of the things, I believe, that, like a lot of the cereals that we have, which are American cereals, right? We don't get the American version, we get the European version, right? Right, like Cheerios, right? We get them from the London Bet then, or from the whatever, we get them from France, or we get them from wherever. One of the reasons is that America America uses a lot more winter wheat.
You love more
wheat that's grown in the winter, right? But I mean, like new wheat. Not winter wheat, spring wheat, whatever it is, whichever one it is, right? I mean, we grow multiple times a year. That's the point, and therefore we're often using Safik. Let's use Safik Chadash. V'ishrisho kodem la'omer ha'omer matir. And what is the standard to make something mutter? The omer, it has to have taken root. So if the grain is still on the ground when you cut the omer, but it's already taken root, so then you can cut it and use it. If it hasn't taken root, then when can you eat it? Next year. Next omer. A year from now.
That's when the new becomes the old.
Is when any grain that had already taken root, so then the omer permits it. If it hasn't taken root yet, so then it has to wait till next year. So if you plant something on Erev Pesach and it doesn't take root before the 16th, so then it only becomes mutter a year from now Pesach. The whole year that grain is asur. Okay? Bimlav asurin achiyavo omer haba. Right? If it didn't take root, you have to wait till the next omer. So that's the summary of the halachot of omer. So let's just go through, again, the summary. Because Simcha's right, meaning this is very halacha l'maisa, and I do want to understand it, but we need to get there. So we need to go step by step. So here, the halacha we know. Omer, what are we talking about? We're talking about the five grains, whatever they are, right? Definitely wheat, barley, rye, and spelt, and shibboleth shu'ol, which is either oats or two-row barley, or whatever it is, okay? There are two halachas that become mutter. One is eating, the other is cutting. Right, you can't cut the new grain before the Omer, and you can't eat the new grain before the Omer. When does something get the heter of the Omer? Anything that had already taken root by the time you brought the Omer becomes permitted with this Omer and is mutter until if it took root afterwards, you have to wait till the next year. Just like the Omer permits you to eat and cut grain outside the Beit HaMikdash, the Shtei HaLechem, which brought in Shavuot, and is of wheat, and is chametz, rather than the Omer, which is barley and matzah. Right? Because remember, most offerings in the Beit HaMikdash of grain are matzah, except for the Shtei HaLechem. Right? Shtei HaLechem, and part of the Todah. The Shtei HaLechem allows you to bring new grains in the Beit HaMikdash. The difference is that if you bring a karban mincha of new grain before the Omer, not only should you not have done that, but it is invalid. If you bring it before the Shtei HaLechem, you shouldn't do it, but if you did it, it's valid. Okay? Those are the halachot that we need to analyze, and we will get through as many of, as we can before the end of the year, or maybe into the summer, I don't know. We will get through as much of this as we can. I hope at least the basics you will walk away with, especially the halacha stuff. It's very important that you understand this before we're finished. We just have to get there.
All the great grows, at least it's highly exactly a whole year until it's harvested.
No, right? A lot of grain doesn't. So a lot of grain, right? Most grain is not going to be a year, right? Most grain you'll plant 2 months before, whatever. I don't know.
So it's like 2 months before the year it's harvested.
So then you know you can't harvest it. It's grown, just sits in the field. You're not allowed to harvest it until the Omer. It just sits. It has to sit.
It's really complicated.
Yes, it has to sit, right? It has to sit.
So you can have honey harvests before the Omer.
You can harvest before the Omer. Exactly. You can harvest before the Omer things that were already planted before the last Omer.
Right.
So if you plant it Rosh Chodesh Nisan, then you can cut it in the summer or cut it in the winter if you want.
So does that mean you can only have one harvest per year?
No. No. I mean you have multiple. Ming. One. You mean you can't like in this same place manage to have two? Yes. Correct. Correct. That this is the problem in America is that America has so much grain, we have multiple plantings, and that's why some of the batches are completely.
Yeah, so
that's exactly the point.
Meachos,
right? Right. You can stagger that one, but yes, 100%.
So all the grain
you can't add even more.
Correct.
So all the grain from last is from last.
Well, right now, everything in the world is mutter. There's basically no grain in the world that is usher right now.
Okay, so
right?
Before Pesach, all the grain that we ate was from before last Omer.
In Israel, yes, because in Israel you can't get a heksher.
Yeah.
Right? In Israel, anything with an Israeli heksher, correct, is yasha, always. Right? The Rabbanut will not give a heksher to something which is not yasha and vadai.
So what is Rabbanut out of grain? Like,
you don't eat grain.
You
don't eat grain for the rest of the year.
Bread, cookies, whatever you.
You wouldn't eat. 100%, you wouldn't eat.
So there's a pressure to make enough grain to last the year.
Correct. 100%. Which in most of the world, there is only one growing. Right? This is not. See,
yeah.
Noah's thinking like an American. In America, we have multiple plantings. Right? And that's why it's a problem in America. In Europe, it's less like that. It's something to do with the way it's planted in Europe, but in Europe, it's much less likely. Right? They use. It's winter wheat, right? It's winter wheat, which is less problematic, right? Because winter wheat means things you planted and right and cut in the winter. Right? Again, the non-Jews, if they cut it before the Omer, that's not a problem. It'll become mutter, the Omer, right? So if it was winter wheat, it's going to be permitted. Summer wheat, right? Spring wheat, which they planted after the Omer, is a problem, right? And different grains, by the way, are problems in different ways, right? For people who are makbid on yashan, in America, makbid on vada yashan, depending on the grain, you have to look at the dates, right? Oats become problematic first, usually, I think. But again, it really depends. So for example, there are certain companies that produce flour, not kosher companies, like not frum companies, like just regular run-of-the-mill companies, no pun intended on that. Yeah, there's no pun on that. That are always yashan. That's just because of the way they produce it. So, for example, at least when I lived in America, Gold Medal, right, which is like a totally standard brand. Gold Medal, if you look on the back and it says KC, right, which means Gold Medal's plant in Kansas City, it just always used winter wheat, so it's always yashan. Vadai, it just is. Right, same as Hecker's. Hecker's is the same way. Hecker's was yashan. It just because of where it grew and where they got their grain in the country. Others were not. Others were not vada yashan. As you can tell, I cared about this, which is why I know these things, right? Right, in Canada it's different, right? Europe's totally different.
I thought that everyone holds that it applies to grain that's done outside of
As we'll see, the simple shot in the Mishnah is that it applies in the whole world, probably midaraisa, whether it's owned by a Jew or non-Jew. How we therefore get to the point in which most Jews historically did not, were not makbid on it, well, that's a good question that we need to answer. But we can't get there until we understand the basic principles. But we will, okay? I really would like to make sure that before the end of the year we understand at least the basics of why it is that, even though this is a straight up halacha, why it is that most communities and kutz la'aretz are not. Should we pause here? This is probably a good point to pause, and then we'll look at the psukim when you get a little pause. Okay. So now what I want to do is at least get the psukim down. Okay? So remember, we have the first machlokah we need to deal with is this question of what exactly permits the omer. This is what we're going to spend the next few days on. What permits the new grain, rather? So remember, in the Mishnah, there was a machlokah. There are, right? Remember, there's a machlokah. The Rabbi Yochanan said, when there's no Beit HaMikdash, when does it become permitted? Midor writes at 16th in the morning. Midor Rabbanan at the end of the day. According to Rabbi Yehuda, he says it's asur all day midoraita. Right? Now, already, right from that Mishnah, what does that sound like? So according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Omer makes the heter, right, earlier. Meaning if you didn't have an Omer, it'd be asur all day. Once you have the Omer, it makes it mutter earlier. According to Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai, the Omer actually prohibits. Because if there's no Beit HaMikdash, it's mutter first thing in the morning on the 16th. When you have the Omer, you need to wait for the Omer.
So
on a biblical level, it actually, the heter, right, the permission to eat, is later in the day than it would be without the Beit HaMikdash, right?
Right.
Again, according to Yehuda, if there's no Beit HaMikdash, the whole 16th is Asur. If there is the Beit HaMikdash, then it's Mutter earlier when you bring the Omer.
Midoraisa.
According to Yochanan ben Zakkai, Midoraisa, if there's no Beit HaMikdash, it's Mutter first thing in the morning, the 16th. Right? Midorabanan it's not. But Midoraisa it is. But the Omer, and therefore when you have the Omer, you have it's actually Mutter later. Right? Not at 6 in the morning, let's say, when the sun rises, whatever it is now, 6-ish, right? 5:44, whatever it is. Whatever it was on Pesach, I don't know. Right? And according to Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, it's later. Now, that already should tell you that there seems to be a machlokas here about the relative weight, meaning what is it that really is making it mutter? To what extent is it the day, right? The day on which you bring the Omer, i.e. the 16th, and to what extent is it the bringing of the Omer itself? That is going to be, right, that's already Machlokes the Mishnah that the Gemara fleshes out. So tomorrow I want you to read the Gemara really carefully, that whole block, that whole Amud, from Mishnah to Mishnah, right, from Samachem and Al Samachem and Bet, the whole Sugya, right? It's not so long, but the whole thing, right? But let's read the Psukim. And you tell me where their machloket might come from, okay? So the Gemara, the Psukim say, yeah? The Psukim. Torah, God, right? Vaydaber Adonai Moshe lemor. So God tells Moshe, Daber al b'nei Yisrael v'amart aliyem, ki tavou al ha'aretz asher ne'noten lecha, ne'noten lechem, uktzartem et kitzira, v'aveitem et omer reishit kitzirchem el ha'kohen. When you come to Eretz Israel, bring, and you cut the grain, you'll bring the Omer, the first of your cuttings, to the Kohen. And the Omer, the Kohen, will wave the Omer on the day after Shabbat, which we already said is the day after the first day of Pesach, meaning the 16th. Vasitem biyoman ibchem et omer keves tamim ben shnato leola ladonai. And that day you also bring a ola, a burnt offering. Uminchato shnei esur nim solet bilav Hashem and ishel ladonai reich nicholach v'nisko yain revirayin. And the mincha is two esronim of fine flour mixed with oil as a fire offering to God, as a sweet smell to God. And then the libation of wine, a quarter of a hin, right? V'lechem v'kali v'charmel lo tochlu ad etzem hayom hazeh ad aviyachem et korban aloichem chukat olam l'dorotechem v'chol moshevotechem. And bread and toasted grain and soft, fresh grain, right, dried out grain, etc. Don't eat until ad etzem hayom hazeh, until the essence of that day, until you bring the karban of your God. This is a law forever in all your places. Okay? That's the pasuk. So now, just from the psukim, I want you to understand some of the key questions that are going to go on here. Okay? So if I ask you, based on the psukim, why would you say like Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? Why would you say like Rabbi Yehuda? I mean, why would you say like Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai that what really permits is the 16th in the morning or the 17th, unless you have the Omer, right? Why do they say what they say? It's based on the Psukim. The Gemara is going to tell you this, but I want you to already see it in the Psukim before you would give it away. Right? So if you read the key pasuk, which is Yud Dalid, so it's Velech Lechem V'Kali V'Charmel Lo Tochlu Ad Etzem Hayom Hazeh Ad Aviyechem Et Korban Elokeichem. Don't eat until Ad Etzem Hayom Hazeh, until you bring the karban. What's the ambiguity that creates the machlokes? No, look. Ar etzem hayom hazeh, until the day. Ar aviyachem et karban alokechem, until you bring the karban. So, which is it? Which is it? So there's two questions. One is it the day or is it the karban? And the other is, right, what is this ar etzem hayom hazeh? What is that day? And there's another problem here that creates an ambiguity, which is a two-letter word that is always a problematic little word. What is that? Ad. What does ad mean? Until. What does until mean in the Gemara? There's always two possibilities. What the Gemara calls ad, the ad bichlal, and ad, the lo ad bichlal, which is up to and including, and up to and not including. Meaning, right? Ad v'lo ad b'chal means go here and no farther. Right? And ad v'ad b'chal means you can go as far as your house. Which it means including your house. Don't go past your house, but you can go to your house. Right? You can walk between here, right, when we tell you, right, at the height of the lockdown. You can go between the Beit Midrash and your house. It doesn't mean you can neither go into your house or the Beit Midrash. It means you can go up to everywhere, including the Beit Midrash and your apartments. Right? So here, there's two ambiguities. One is that it's not clear the extent to which the heter is created by Ad Hayom Hazeh, Ad Etzem Hayom Hazeh, or Ad Aviyachem Et Karban Elokechem, meaning what's the role of the day, and what's the role of the karban? Right? And what's the other problem? Ad. What do you mean Ad? It's because ad can mean until that day, which can either mean up to and meaning or including. So now you understand that the possibilities being played with in the Mishnah are Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says ad hayom hazeh means that when does the heter really come? The 16th in the morning, meaning up to, not including. And then how does he read ad haviyachem et karban alokichem? Unless you have the karban, in which case the 16th isn't enough. You need to wait for the 16th plus the bringing of the karban. What does Rabbi Yehuda say? What? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says up to, not including. Not including. Rabbi Yochanan says up to and not including. And that's why he says biblically it's mutter on the morning of the 16th, unless you have the Omer, in which case you have to wait. Look how he reads the Pasuk. Ad etzem hayom hazeh, until the beginning of the 16th, unless you have a karban, in which case, ad aviyachem et karban elokeichem, until you bring the karban. How does Rabbi Yehuda read it? Ad etzem hayom hazeh is up to and including, meaning you can't eat it until the entire day has passed, unless ad aviyachem et karban elokeichem, unless you brought the karban, in which case it becomes mutter early.
Yeah, so what is the essence of the day then?
Correct.
Yeah.
Right? Is. So, but you see how what they're doing, and this is what the Gemara is going to extrapolate. I want you to see it inside tomorrow in the Gemara, but now I want you to understand what's coming from the Pasuk. There's two questions that they have. One is, what is the role of Ad? And the second is, what is the relationship between the carbon and the day, which one permits and which day are you talking? The 16th inclusive, the 16th not inclusive, right? And what? And is the role of the carbon to create more isurim, meaning Ad etzem hayom hazeh until the morning, or right, and then unless you're bringing the carbon, in the case you have to wait for both, or you wait till the day, but it can cut the isur early.
Well, to get him, that's the thing of 16th as well.
Ah, very good. Very good. The other question, the next question you can ask is, why didn't you just say Ad hayom hazeh? What's etzem hayom hazeh? What is the essence of this day? And that's going to be part of the problem, right? That's going to be yet another stage of this machloket, which is, what is etzem? Right? And that's going to be part of it. But again, I want you to understand how the Gemara here is really just taking the tzrukim and taking them apart. The last question that I want to deal with, right, and I'll just lay it out for you now, and then we'll finish for today, is the question of, what time is it now?
Right now,
52. Okay, so let me just get the last point. The last problem that I think that these tzrukim force you to ask, and that's what's on this short source sheet in addition to the Gemara, is, if I ask you, what is the purpose of the Karban HaOmer? What would you tell me?
To give thanks for the new grain.
Oh, I don't mean philosophically. Like, what does it do? Right? What is its role? Good. So if you read Pasuk Yudalit, you would say, I think you're right philosophically, right? Pasuk Yudalit tells you that the role of the Omer is what? To permit the new grain, in whatever way it does that. Right? Except, what's the problem? Turn back to Pasuk Yud. Daber el bnei Yisrael v'amarta aleihem ki tavo el haaretz asher ani noten lachem uktartem ketira v'aveitem et omer reishit ketir chamel kalein. Bring your first grain, probably because of what Simcha says, right? As a form of thanks. The first grain you have, you bring to God. V'enifet omer el bnei Yisrael v'amarchem v'achar shavadim v'no kalein. And you wave it, right? How many psukim does the Pasuk spend talking about the bringing of the Omer before it ever talks about the fact that the Omer has a role of, right? If let's say you were doing a Pasuk a day, right? You were, you know, and you didn't know what was coming. And so you read Pasuk Tet, Yud, Yud Aleph, Yud Bet, Yud Gimel. What would you think the Omer is? What Simcha said? Just a Thanksgiving offering. Suddenly you get to Yud Dalet, and what happens? You find out that it's Matir. But now, that there's another question you have to ask, therefore, is how do you read Psukim Tet, Yud, Yud Aleph, Yud Bet, Yud Gimel in light of Yud Dalet? Now, there are two ways you could take this. One is to say, you had an incomplete story. But what is the nature of the Omer? The nature of the Omer is, it's what we call in Halacha a Matir. Its entire purpose is to permit the grain. Right? To permit the grain. And it's just that the Pasuk didn't teach you that until the end. Or you could say, but no, there's actually two roles to the Omer. One is, it's a carbon, it's the carbon of the second day of Pesach. It's a carbon. And it has a secondary role, which is, it permits new grain. And that's why you have four psukim that talk about the Omer independent of the heter, of the fact that it creates a heter, because there's also just a mitzvah to bring the Omer. Now, the way this is put in the, as you'll see in the Acharonim, is it a matir or is it a mitzvah? Right? Is the Omer fundamentally defined by the fact that it permits the grain, or is it defined as a mitzvah which happens to permit grain? Now, the last point I would make is that you could ask this independently, but you could also ask this in light of the Machlokas of Yehuda and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Because think about it. According to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, if there's no Beit HaMikdash, is the grain mutter earlier or later than there was when there is an Omer? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, earlier, which means it's hard to say that the Omer is only a matir. Why? Because when there's no Omer on a biblical level, the new grain becomes permitted earlier. Right? It becomes permitted earlier. So it's very hard to say that the very definition of the Omer is that it's there to permit if, in fact, without the Omer, it becomes permitted before. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that no, it remains usher until the end of the day, but the Omer moves that permission up earlier, it's much easier to understand how you might define it as a matir. So part of their machlokas might be, how do you read this continuum? Right, from Tet to Yudalit. Do you think that these are two different roles? Permitting and the mitzvah? Or do you say it's only one role? And so the questions I want you to keep your eyes out for tomorrow when you read the Gemara and however far you get in the sources is, one is this relationship between mitzvah matir, right, between the Omer being a standalone mitzvah or its role being to permit. The question of how do you read ad, right, up to inclusive, not inclusive, and the relationship between the day at Etzem Yamazeh and the bringing of the Karban, with all those questions, that's what the Gemara is grappling with, all those questions, and that's how you can start beginning to understand the Heter. Once we finish that, which will take a few days, right, the source sheet I have is only the first of a few, because this is a bit of a complicated sugya, then we can move to the question, which is Lamaisa, which is, okay, where does this apply? Israel, Chutz La'aretz, owned by Jews, owned by non-Jews. Why is that most people are not makbid on Vaday Yashu? Where does that come from? But first we need to talk about the basic categories. So tomorrow, read the Gemara really, really carefully. Get as far as you can, and we'll continue with... not tomorrow. Today's Thursday. Sunday. On Sunday we'll do this, okay?